This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Spoiler number one is Dr. Lee Franz.
It stinks.
What is going on? What is going on?
Episode 100.
Woo!
Submission 001 Bravo. Back to show number one, the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour Revisited.
It's time for the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour with from St. Elsewhere, Ed Begley Jr. Playmate of the Year, Shannon Twee. Charles Nelson Reilly. Nedra Bolt. Antonio Hall. Stars of the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour, Gene Rayburn and John Bauman.
Okay, we welcome you one and all to the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. This is a marriage of two of your favorite TV games. I'll be hosting the Match Game.
And a little bit later on, I'll be handling Hollywood Squares.
Splendid.
Darn it, Greg. You got your peanut butter in my chocolate again.
Well, you got your chocolate in my peanut butter. There, I did it! Third time's the charm! I finally did it!
One try.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we're using the same joke we started episode one with, because darn it, we can. Well, we're going back to Match Game Hollywood Squares for episode 100, because we found out so much about the show since episode one, because for the most part, Buzzer only aired maybe the first 3 weeks?
Yeah, first 3 weeks, because remember, when Buzzer started, they did that preview week back in February of 2019, and they didn't start regularly airing the show until October of 2019, around the time we started. So they aired episodes 2 through 5 in February of 2019 from the first week, and then they had aired weeks 2 and 3, and when we started episode 1, week 3 had just aired on Buzzer.
No, actually, week 3 hadn't aired yet. We only got up to week 2.
No, we did week 3. No, it was week 3 because we talked about Magnificent Beard Guy and the $30,000.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, I thought we missed that. So we know a lot more about Match Game Hollywood Squares than we did at this time roughly a year ago. And also, we didn't have one individual with us, and we wanted to give him an opportunity to chime in with his thoughts and feelings about Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. The floor is yours, Chico.
Okay, so, now I know how my friend Kim feels. Anyway, Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour, it's one of those shows that worked better on paper than it did in actual practice. Like, that's hard. Because the Match Game, yeah, the winner of the Match Game goes on to the Hollywood Squares, where they meet the champion of the day. And the winner of the Hollywood Squares goes on to play the Super Match. And, again, it has this strange little sort of endearing quality to it.
It's like this show, on paper, sounds so... It's unbelievable that this concept actually happened.
And yet it did.
Well, but it also proves that you can't keep two venerable franchises down. Because if you remember, Hollywood Squares would have gone off the air like 2 years earlier, and Match Game would have been off the air fall of 82, so you're talking about just over a year earlier.
Again, both franchises, they're still things. I mean, Hollywood Squares had hip-hop squares and country squares And thanks, Viacom, for owning the format rights to it.
Yeah, but give us a proper reboot on the soon-to-be-renamed from CBS All Access to Paramount Plus, because Tom Bergeron ain't got anything to do now that he's no longer on Tits with the Stars.
Thanks, Tyra.
Yeah, thanks, Tyra.
And Match Game, well, Match Game is... The reboot of Match Game that's on ABC right now is just...
Alec Baldwin, just fantastic.
Yeah. And
oh, absolutely.
And the writing and the casting. And I don't know if you saw the episode that aired last night, but they have the meme match now.
Oh, no. I'm going to have to watch that.
Oh, I didn't watch it. I went to bed after last night's episode aired. I mean, both formats still going strong today. Mm-hmm. 1983. And it's amazing how this format came together, because if you read our good friend Adam Nedif's book on Gene Rayburn, the matchless Gene Rayburn, NBC needed an hour-long game show to be like a filler in between, because they were going to premiere a new soap opera sometime around 84 called Santa Barbara.
Yeah, and they needed something to build a time in between Another World and whatever was airing at 4 o'clock at the time. Donahue!
Yeah, I was going to say, it probably went back to the affiliates at that point.
Yeah.
Because I know Donahue here in New York probably aired around like 4 o'clock here on Channel 4, mm-hmm. WNBC. But yeah, I think one of the initial ideas was to do an hour-long match game. But someone at either NBC or Goodson decided wouldn't be a good idea to be on its own for an hour. So someone thought, why don't we just get the rights to Hollywood Squares?
Okay, that's one way of playing the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So remember, at this time in 1983, the rights for Hollywood Squares, so Merrill Heater and Bob Quigley Productions sold the rights to the format to Filmways sometime in like the 1970s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they continued to produce the show.
Yep.
So around like 1981, 1982, Filmways got bought out by a little vulnerable motion picture company that did some movies over at Warner Brothers, but was striking it out on its own with its own distribution deal. Orion Pictures.
Orion is bankrupt now.
And they bought out Filmways to start their Orion Television production outlet. So Mark Goodson Productions goes to Orion and is like, hey guys, we're trying to bring back Match Game, but we have an idea. Why don't we borrow the rights to your format, Hollywood Squares, and we make it part of an hour-long show? And somebody at Ryan Productions was like, that sounds completely insane, but okay.
Yep, it was indeed completely insane.
Yeah, but as we mentioned in episode one, you had one piece missing on this show.
How would you have one piece missing? You have a host, right?
Well, yes, but what makes Match Game Match Game? What makes Hollywood Squares Hollywood Squares?
Richard Dawson, but you're not getting him because he's at Family Feud.
Yeah, the writing makes both shows. Talk to the greats about it. Dick DiBartolo on Match Game, Bruce Valanche on Hollywood Squares. Talk to them about writing.
Yeah, and talk about two of the best writers in the business. But also, I mean, you're missing a key celebrity from Hollywood Squares. In part, this was because, remember, Paul Lynde died in 1982.
Yeah.
Sad.
Very sad. And most of the old school Hollywood Squares players, talking like George Gobel.
Rosemary.
Well, Rosemary didn't even play this. George Gobel supposedly had the Hollywood Squares part down, because, you know, he had been doing it for ages.
Ever.
But the problem is he wasn't good at Match Game. Because it does really take two different types of comedy. So you really didn't have a set-in-stone star for this show. You had a bunch of, for lack of a better phrase, semi-stars.
Yeah.
So you had your regulars.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't regulars in the traditional sense. It wasn't like you had like on Match Game, you would have like Brett, Charles, and Richard all the time, or Hollywood Squares, you'd have like Paul, Wally Cox, your Rosemary's hanging around there and about.
Yeah. What's a TV show supposed to do? Hit the NBC lot.
Oh, yeah.
This was the ultimate promotional tool, especially if you were a soap opera star, and even air quotes around the word star, in 1983 and 84. If you were a sitcom, again, air quotes, star, you were on this show. If you were on a struggling show, you were on this show. And, I mean, just if we went through the list of celebrities really fast from other NBC shows. So you had Tom Villard of previous installment, We Got It Made. And then you had Ed Begley Jr. of St. Elsewhere and liker of a tweet that we did maybe about a month ago.
Thank you, Ed.
And then you had Bonnie Urseth again from We Got It Made. You had Edie McClurg wouldn't have been on anything at NBC at that time. I don't know.
Yeah, the Hogan family would be like 2-3 years away.
That would be a number of years away.
Yep.
You had, and this is a person who was like a regular celebrity. I mean, I haven't done the math in terms of how many episodes these folks appeared on, but you had Leonard Fry from second installment, Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Yep. And of course, you might have had the entire cast of real people on it one time.
I didn't have Byron Allen at that point.
Okay, they did not have Byron Allen, but they did have Skip Stevenson, Sarah Purcell, Bill Rafferty, and
Mark Russell.
Mark Russell.
Yeah, we didn't even know Mark Russell was on Real People.
Yep, some guy named David Ruprecht.
Yes, and this is the discovery we've made since the show, because we were wondering in episode one, what the heck was David Ruprecht doing in 1984?
And I don't think any of us had real people on our answer cards.
No.
Nope. I was thinking, still writing for sitcoms, I don't know.
I had, since he was like the boyfriend of somebody on the last couple episodes of Three's Company, I figured he was promoting that. But then you have Alison Arngrim, and this would have been the last few years of Little House on the Prairie.
I actually think Little House's last season would have just finished.
Little House proper would have been finished. It would finish later in 1984 with a made-for-TV movie where they blow up the entire town.
Oh.
Jeez.
Harsh, yeah.
And then you had a pre-Night Court Marky Post.
Mm-hmm. Would she have been on The Fall Guy?
Yeah, she was Fall Guy.
Yeah, she was on Fall Guy.
Okay.
You had personal favorite Nedra Voles, who would have been wrapping up a brief run on Different Strokes.
Yeah, your mm-hmm. personal favorite.
Just saying that.
Well.
Yeah, and our favorite, and this is like a collective favorite, week six had the person we're going to build the statue of, McLean Stevenson.
Stevenson, our patron saint of this podcast, McLean Stevenson.
And this would have been after Condo, because Condo, as we said not too long ago, maybe about 20 episodes ago, was in early to mid-1983. So he was off of Condo.
Yeah, but it did help give Peter Tomarkin his hosting stint on Pressure Luck.
I would say it did.
Oh, by the way, one thing I realized. Okay. Mm-hmm. Who produced Condo?
That would be Whitten Thomas.
What other show did they do?
What other show didn't they do? You're talking your Soap, Benson, Soap. Golden Girls.
All right, Soap. Okay. Who was the announcer on Soap?
Rod Roddy. Rod Roddy.
Get the connection?
I see it.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Also, who remembers these favorites? Brian Mitchell doing his best impersonation of the Fifth Doctor, ladies and gentlemen.
With the celery on the side. Well, now, did he have the celery on the side?
I don't know if he ever had the celery, but he had like ever-growing plant life in his lapel.
Yeah, he had vegetation galore.
Also, Jamie Widows, shortly before Charles in charge, or maybe shortly after, I don't know.
No, I think it was shortly before, because he wasn't credited with it.
Yeah, because Charles in Charge's first season wasn't until 84. By the way, first season of Charles in Charge, future installment.
And also, when Jamie Widows was on Super Password, he was definitely credited from Charles in Charge at that time. He definitely was not on Match Game Hollywood Squares.
Yeah. And
so there's that to put that to rest.
And he was excellent on Super Password. I just want to point that out.
Oh, he was very good. Then you had, and these are two names that really didn't hit it big yet, but they'd hit it big in the next couple of years. On the same week, week six, Michael Winslow.
Damn right, Michael Winslow. Mm-hmm. This was shortly before Police Academy.
Yes, sir.
And our least favorite, Jay Leno.
Boo!
Yeah, we're going through that as quickly as possible.
Oh, another week would have the now late great Helen Reddy, along with Pat Sajak, Larry Minetti from Magnum, Marshall Wallace from Stuff.
Yeah, the Simpsons wouldn't be like for what, another 7 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another 6 years.
Charles Nelson Reilly making a return to the game. Tim Reed from WKRP. Bruce Baum, the comedian. And from Sale of the Century, Sally Julian. Although, she wouldn't have been on Sale of the Century in 1984.
No, she was gone like after 13 weeks in 83. Yeah.
I think she was at the time voicing on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yeah, I think that's what we determined.
Yeah, we determined okay. That. By the way, guys, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, that will be a future entry whenever the third MCU Spider-Man movie comes out. And by the way, Chico, I don't know if you heard the news. It's been a crazy last couple of days.
It's been a crazy day, but apparently the MCU Spider-Man and the Amazing Spider-Man are going to be connected by Jamie Foxx.
Yes, they're going to be connected by the host of Beat Shazam. Hopefully WandaVision or Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness will explain this.
Yeah, because Lord knows we can't.
Also, we should add, in late 83, there was a week dedicated to Leave It to Beaver. And you had, listen to these stars,
Barbara Billingsley.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
Just hang loose, blood. She's going to catch up on a rebound out of med side.
What it is, big mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck a rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't want to help. Chomp don't get to help.
Say, can't hang. Say, seven up.
Jive ass dude don't got no brains in here.
Richard Deacon, and this would have probably been one of his last appearances because he passed away in August of 84.
Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike, for reminding us all a couple episodes ago that Richard Deacon died shortly after this.
Sorry. Another person who died very recently, Ken Osmond.
Oh, yeah. Sad. R.I.P. Ken.
The Beaver himself, Jerry Mathers.
Love the Beaver.
Yep.
Do you love him as much as you love Wings?
No, not as much as I love Wings. By the way, Mike, did you know that Wings made Tony Shalhoub's career?
I did not know that.
By the way, happy birthday, Crystal Bernard, at the time we're recording this.
Yeah, happy birthday, Crystal. And then you had Lumpy, Frank Bank.
Frank Bank?
Yeah, Frank Bank.
Oh, did you know Frank Bank's going to be in a future installment next year along with Ken Osmond?
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
You'll have to stay tuned to see what it is. Hint, it also involves one of the people we just mentioned.
And then there are two more minor characters, Jerry Weil and Rich Carrell.
Rich Carrell would, of course, go on to be more of a writer than an actor.
And rounding out the Leave It to Beaver week, Gallagher.
Gallagher! Because as we all know, Gallagher was a big Leave It to Beaver fan. But guys, I gotta say, I feel ripped. We got the entire week. Not once did we get Gallagher smashing a watermelon. It would have been perfect. The final episode of 1983. You have Gallagher smash a watermelon to close out the year. You have somebody from the panel bring out the watermelon. And he smashes it with the sledgehammer. And the entire crowd at the NBC Burbank studio goes nuts.
Yeah, I'm guessing Gene Rayburn wouldn't have been too hot on it.
I'm surprised they didn't do anything for that episode, because at least going back to the CBS Match Game, every New Year's Eve or end of the year, they would do some sort of transition from 73 to 74, 74, 75, so on and so forth. Yeah, the year 1983 wasn't attached in any way, but it would almost seem like a natural to do that for 1984.
But they did have the Christmas decorations.
Oh, they did have the Christmas decorations. And we're going to talk about that episode in a little bit.
Yeah.
We've already talked about it. We talked about it, gosh, what, like, I would say 85 episodes ago, maybe?
Yeah.
80 episodes?
Around
we talked about
29.
It a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. We come back in 1984. Gosh, look at all the people that were on NBC shows at the time. Dorothy Lyman, Mama's Family.
Mama's Family.
And you had David Ruprecht. We talked about that earlier. And then one person who we didn't even know until doing some research.
Oh, yes.
Christy Claridge.
Who?
Yes.
Enlighten Chico, Greg.
Okay. Do you know who Christine Claridge's sister is?
Someone named Claridge. I don't know.
It would be one Linda Hogan.
Oh.
He's not wrong.
Yes. Also, Linda Hogan, former Match Game contestant, too. Fun fact.
Yep.
Brother.
And then we continue the last taped week in 1983. We have Mark Russell, who we mentioned was on Real People at the time.
And this would be timely, kind of timely, too, because Mark Russell is... What is Mark Russell known for, guys?
He would be... known for his comedic piano playing.
On politics.
On politics, yes.
He's Mark Russell, America's funniest political savage. And he's back on PBS with a brand new election year comedy special.
I understand that Al Gore's planning to run for president in the year 2000. President Gore. He's such a bore. What's he stand for? Why does he look sore, President Gore?
Time Magazine says if you look up comedy in the dictionary, there should be a photo or other likeness of Mark Russell.
Old Bill Clinton had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, with a crime bill here, education bill there, here a cut, there a cut, everywhere a budget cut.
Newsweek magazine calls Mark Russell a cross between Woody Allen, Lenny Bruce, and Richard Pryor. Only a lot funnier.
According to the latest polls, President Clinton leads Bob Dole of Kansas by 16 percentage points. It's brought to mind this little chestnut. Mine eyes have seen the latest polls. Dole 16 points behind.
The Wall Street Journal says the genius of Mark Russell is that he takes songs we all know and changes the words from what they regularly are and puts in things about politics that are real funny.
I understand Ross Perot wasn't allowed in the televised debate. Here's a little song about all that. Ross Perot, Ross Perot, Ross Perot, Ross Perot.
Christian Science Monitor says we've reconsidered our concept of God, and it just might be Mark Russell.
Deficit. We got a great big huge old deficit.
The Mark Russell Election Year Comedy Special. Only on the network that's known for comedy. PBS.
And what was probably going on at the time?
The start of the 84 election.
Yep. So it's like, who better to have on than Mark Russell?
And I don't remember him doing anything political. But again, at this point, Real People would have been, oh my gosh, it would have been in his final season, I believe. I don't think it got past 84.
No, it wasn't past 84.
So this was a last-ditch effort to save Real People. Speaking of last-ditch efforts, albeit it's for a different network, hey, another Happy Days star, Anson Williams. And then Leonard Fry still being credited from Mr. Smith, even though it's been canceled.
From Mr. Smith, Leonard Fry.
And then you had Pat McCormick, who is best known as one of the best writers in the Carson stable.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, he's one of the best, absolutely. And then Jenny Lee Harrison, who would have been, again, on another dying show, Three's Company.
Yeah. She was still on Three's Company at this time?
She was still on Three's Company at the time.
Yeah.
So even when Priscilla Fawns was on there?
Yep.
Wow.
But then we start in 1984 with a bang. Or at least the first episodes recorded in 1984. We start again with the NBC promotion machine from Hot Potato, Bill Cullen.
From Hot Potato, Bill Cullen. And we got the answer. How is Bill Cullen going to get to the set?
Turns out he just stands there.
He just stands there. They shine a spotlight on Bill Cullen like he's Batman. It's like, here's Bill Cullen.
For all we know, he could be Batman.
That would be awesome if he was Batman.
Then we have another celebrity whose show is dying. Again, Three's Company, Richard Klein. And then Ellen Bree from St. Elsewhere, again, mm-hmm. the NBC promotional machine. You had Linda Dano, who was on one of the soap operas. I think it was Another World.
Oh, it was Another World.
It was definitely an NBC show. I don't think they ever promoted a soap opera from outside NBC. So it was either Another World or it was likely Days of Our Lives.
Or Search for Tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think there's many people who were on Search for Tomorrow at that point.
Yeah, wait a minute. I think Search for Tomorrow still would have been a few months before moving from CBS to NBC.
Okay, so not, it's not on yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely nobody from Search for Tomorrow was on this show, at least from what we've seen. Then you had one big returning star from the 70s match game in Gary Berghoff. Not really of Aftermath, but he did appear on a couple episodes that we mentioned not terribly long ago. And then most of the rest of the cast was like from We've Got It Made. Terry Copley, Matt McCoy, Bonnie Urseth, Tom Villard.
Trying to resuscitate a dead series.
And the thing is, notice we didn't say Stephanie Kramer. She had bailed already, probably.
Yeah, she was on her way to Hunter.
She had just started at the police academy.
And Leah Ayers was on, and a name that's not familiar, but we're going to talk about her eventually because she was on the sitcom version of 9 to 5.
Ooh!
Yeah. A way to make a living.
Indeed.
And then up to week 14, we get Alan Thicke and Gloria Loring, the loving couple.
Wait a minute!
Say it.
Alan Thicke!
Yeah!
From Future...
Robin's daddy!
Oh, but of also Future installment... Thick of the night! Running in the thick of the night. Under the city light. Follow the beat. Come in the treat you right. Running in the thick of the night. Yes. Yeah. Look
who came to visit us on the 100th episode.
Oh, wait, what's the 100th episode, guys?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Oh, I didn't realize it was the 100th episode. What am I going to do?
Something.
We'll talk about you in a little bit.
Oh, okay. I'll just sit around here.
Okay.
And then, as mentioned earlier, Helen Reddy was on week 15. Rest in peace. She just died very recently.
Mm-hmm.
Again, NBC Promotion Factory, Pat Sajak.
Well, yeah, wasn't he on some show with a wheel and a thing and
Before they had the wheel condoms.
It's called the white thing, Mike.
You call it what you want. I'm going to call it what I want. Then we get back to Richard Klein and Leonard Fry. George Gobel was on, and this is like his only appearance, and he did try walking across the stage for the first episode, but on episode 2 through 5, they pretty much did a Bill Cullen because he was not in as great of shape as he could have been.
Yep. But God bless him, he tried.
Yeah. He did try. And you had a lot of regulars. Listen to this. You had Jimmy Walker and Elaine Joyce and Bill Daly and new regular Leonard Fry.
Let her try.
Yeah, so you had a lot of old and new people aboard that week 16. And then week 17, Robert Donner, he was a match game player. I
mean, he was a match game player.
He played in the final few years of match game when he was doing Mork and Mindy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had one of Greg's favorites, Gordon Jump.
Oh, yeah. You know what we learned, guys?
Don't go to that bicycle shop.
Yeah, you stay the hell away from that bike shop.
Stay the hell away from that bicycle shop.
By the way, that episode of Different Strokes will be covered eventually on this podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
And then week 18 was Too Close for Comfort week. Okay, wait a second. Too Close for Comfort is on ABC. What are we doing promoting another network show?
Well, guys, Too Close for Comfort went to that magical world of first-run syndication.
And it would have been around this time, wouldn't it?
Yep.
So you had Ted Knight, Nancy Dassault, Lydia Cornell, established as quite a smart cookie on the panel. Deborah Van Valkenburgh, not a smart cookie on the panel. Jim J. Bullock, a preface of things to come.
Oh, and, definitely.
Okay. And then you have to, I guess, fill out the rest of the squares. Elise Knight, Arsenio Hall, and Bart Braverman.
Who had, like, really nothing to do with the show. And Elise Knight was just Ted Knight's daughter. I don't remember her ever being on the show. Then we get to week 19. Again, dying show alert. Aaron Moran from Happy Days.
Yes.
And, yeah, Charles Nelson Reilly.
Oh, yes. And we also had Bob Eubanks plugging Dream House.
Which would have had maybe about another 4 months at this point.
Oh, but guys, we have another favorite of ours.
Yep.
We have Fred Travellino on the panel.
Look at me.
We're going to talk about some of these celebrities in a little bit.
Oh, but hold up, guys. We do have somebody. We do have one celebrity that we'll talk about. Hopefully next year, James Sloan from Future Installment.
Oh, Madeline.
Oh, Madeline.
Yeah, we'll do that eventually for sure. Mm-hmm.
We're going to definitely do that in 2021.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of Oh, Madeline, the next week, week 20, we had Jesse Wells from Oh, Madeline.
Oh, Madeline.
And if you look at her IMDb page, Oh, Madeline is like the only thing Jesse Wells did.
Oh.
So she got on Match Game Hollywood Squares. She got on Oh, Madeline, and thanks for playing.
Mm-hmm.
We also had Greg's favorite, Tom Bray from Riptide.
Yes!
Tom Bray.
Yeah, and Paula Kelly from Night Court, which would have only been around for pretty much like 2 months now. Yeah, this aired in March of 84, and Night Court started in early January of 84. And then again, the election year, we have somebody who is renowned for being part of the election process for a number of years, Pat Paulson.
Yes, Pat Paulson, mm-hmm. who was mainly famous for just running in presidential elections.
Yeah, and I mean, he started doing that like in 68 when he was on the Smothers Brothers. And then again, another dying show alert, Anson Williams is back again.
Mm-hmm.
Then week 21, we got James B. Seeking of Hill Street Blues.
Oh, and by the way, another thing I want to note, James B. Seeking was in, oh, Chico, you're going to love this. He was in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, as the captain of the Excelsior.
Yellow alert. Captain to the bridge. Yellow alert.
Bridge, this is the captain. How can you have a yellow alert in space dock?
Sir, someone is stealing the Enterprise.
I'm on my way.
Damn right he was.
Yeah, and friggin' Scotty, trying to show him off, cripples the warp drive on that thing. Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, who was James B. Seeking's first officer in Star Trek III, Chico? Do you want to take a guess?
First officer in Star Trek III?
On the Excelsior. No, on the Excelsior.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh,
okay, get ready for this. Miguel Ferrer from Twin Peaks.
It all comes back to Twin Peaks.
You knew it was coming!
It always goes back to Twin Peaks.
And a bunch of other things. R.I.P. Miguel.
And then We have regulars, Nedra Voles and Leonard Fry. But then we have one name which may not be familiar, Lois Hamilton. Doing a little bit of research on her, she had like the number of the, she had like the record number of guest appearances, cameo appearances on TV shows back in like 83 or so. So her career at that point was showing up as that person on that show. But also, if you, that name doesn't ring a bell, you know she has a game show connection.
She does have a game show connection.
Yeah, she does. Under her, the last name Araño, Lois Araño was a dealer on Card Sharks back in the 70s and early 80s.
Oh. Oh, yeah. And also, was it Marky Post? Marky Post was a dealer on Card Sharks, too, wasn't
Marky
she?
Marky Post was a dealer.
She was a dealer on Card Sharks, and also she was a writer on Double Dare. Yep.
She Marky Post could do it all.
She cut her teeth with Goodson Todman.
And Marky Post never let anybody forget about it.
Yeah, can't forget where you came from. Mm-hmm. Then we get another regular from the 70s match game, Fanny Flagg.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So we're getting some of the old crowd back, maybe as a ploy to bring up the ratings. But then we have Tom Villard. And again, another NBC show that needed promotion. From Fame, Carlo Imperato.
Okay.
That would also, of course, like Too Close for Comfort before it, go to that wonderful land of First Run syndication.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, and it was there for a number of years, yeah.
It was there forever.
Well, it lived forever.
Fame lived forever.
Oh, that's clever.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was well played. And then the last week we've seen at this point is week 22, and that was the St. Elsewhere week. Kim Miori, Eric Lanneville, Ed Begley Jr., Norman Lloyd, Howie Mandel, Nancy Stafford, Terrence Knox, Ellen Bree. And one thing I want you to take away from this, at least as of the time of this recording, all eight of those celebrities are still with us.
Yes! Yep. That is incredible for a show 36 years old. And Norman Lloyd is like, what, over 100?
She's like 105.
Wow. That is nuts.
Ed Begley Jr. is still working. Of course, we all know Howie Mandel. His pick for the Golden Buzzer just won America's Got Talent.
And also Eric Lanneville, I should add, and we're going to get to contestants in a little bit. His sister was a contestant early on Match Game Hollywood Squares.
She was!
Yes.
Wow!
Yeah.
So he got many connections there. And obviously, if Eric Lanneville's sister, you know, made it later, she wasn't going to be playing the same panel with her brother.
That would just be weird.
Yeah.
Well, that would also be just a little illegal.
Just a hair illegal, too.
Yeah. But
of course, I believe in one of the episodes, Eric Lanneville talks about getting his first directing gig. And of course, now he's gone on to be a great director on television shows.
Yeah, I think he has. And just quickly going through some of the names that we'll see on future episodes. And yeah, it's very possible they may air the rest of the episodes because we're 22 weeks deep and it only ran for 39 weeks. So that means there's like 18 weeks left.
Yeah.
Yep.
And just going through the weeks really fast. Another dying show, Roxy Roker from Jefferson's, and that would be gone by 85.
Yes, it would.
Mm-hmm. And then you had Steve Allen, Jane Meadows. And I know Steve Allen at least did Match Game, I want to say like 73, 74. So he's a veteran of sorts.
And he probably did Squares at some point.
Oh, I'm sure he did. Then you had Gloria Loring again. And again, she would have been associated with NBC with a soap opera. Then at week 24, real fast, Jane Kennedy, Wycliffe's own.
Yes.
She would have been obviously on CBS at that time.
So would Michael Lembeck on One Day at a Time.
Well, and also Sorrel Book, because he would have been Boss Hogg on Dukes of Hazzard. And again, that's another show that really was sort of in its dying days. I mean, I know it lasted till like 86 or 87. But the season that you lost Bo and Luke Duke and had their cousins.
Oh, Coy.
That may need to be an installment.
It is going to be an installment. Coy and Vance Duke will be an installment. Of course, and along with that episode, The Dukes of Hazzard that had Simon McQuirkendale in it.
And then you had Bill Rafferty again. Week 25, Tim Reed, who had been on a couple of episodes. Bill Anderson, another person who's used to Match Game in the 70s. He also did, let's not forget, he did The Better Sex.
With Sarah Purcell.
In the 80s, he would have done Fandango.
That's right, on TNN.
And that would have been on around this time. So I wonder if they promoted from, you know, Fandango on TNN, Bill Anderson. I mean, it would make total sense. Then you had, again, Linda Dano, and you had Fred Travellina, and Soupy Sales. I don't remember Soupy being on many Match Game episodes.
I hear Soupy has a great takeout business.
But then week 26. Oh, Greg, I hope you're sitting. We got names here. Leonard Fry, number one. Lydia Cornell, Richard Klein. Abby Dalton, there's your Hollywood Squares veteran.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then Charles Nelson Reilly, another Match Game veteran, or you know, another appearance from him. But then, and Phyllis Diller, who had been on a number of times. But there's two names, Renee Enriquez from Hill Street Blues. But I hope you're sitting. Chuck Wagner!
Yeah, from Auto Man.
Presentamos Zippers.
From Auto Man, and he was on Password Plus with Regis Philbin in late 81.
Oh, and by the way, Mike, hashtag holograms cannot wear suits.
No, they cannot.
But they can win money being contestants on Password Plus.
Yeah, he only won like $3,700, and he was on like for five games. He never won Alphabetics.
Sad.
Oh, that's...
And then week 27, McLean Stevenson again. Again from Night Court, Richard Mall. And then you had from Hotel, Nathan Cook. And you had Martha Smith, who would have been on Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yeah, and we mentioned she was on Go.
Absolutely. And then you had Charles Nelson Reilly for the second straight week. And you had Bonnie Urseth again, trying to save We Got It Made. And then you had Larry Linville, who, would he have been on Aftermath at this point?
Larry Linville?
Yes.
Okay. So he's probably trying to save that ship. And then you had Nedra Voles. But then you get to week 28. Listen to this. You got Deidre Hall, who was like big soap star back in the 80s.
Still is, by the way.
Still is. You had Christopher Rich and Nancy Frangione, who are a married couple who had been on, I believe, Another World.
Yeah, this was this is the NBC Soap Week.
Yep.
Yeah, and the thing is, the big name I wanted to mention, because I know Greg is going to flip out.
Oh, I know, and I know Chica's going to flip out, too.
I am going to flip out. I'm going to flip out.
Commence flipping. John DeLancey.
I went to college with this kid, yeah!
And, of course, John DeLancey, better known from?
Star Trek The Next Generation is Q. Mm-hmm.
Everything goes back to Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, but you know what?
We're pulling out all the in-jokes, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I'll say this. John DeLancey is Q. He makes the Star Trek The Next Generation pinball machine.
Bonjour, mon capitaine.
Q, what are you doing here?
Let's play a little game.
Q, we don't have time for your game.
I don't know if you've seen him in Lower Decks, but wow.
Oh, he's in Lower Decks?
He's in Lower Decks.
Oh, my God. I need to watch that. I got to get CBS All Access. Is that on that or Nickelodeon?
It's All Access.
Okay, because I know Nickelodeon's getting a Star Trek animated series, I think.
Yeah.
And then week 29, we go back to the 50s. We don't have any Leave It to Beaver people, but listen to who we have. I mean, this is a pretty good lineup from the 50s. You have David Nelson, who would have passed away maybe about almost 2 years later. Mm-hmm. Actually, about a year and a half later. You had Angela Cartwright, Ed Burns, Cookie Burns, who we just lost not that long ago. Bob Denver, and of course you guys know him as Gilligan, but he was also on Dobie Gillis.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, and then, of course, direct from the 50s, Jay Leno.
Oh.
I don't get it either. But then you had Fabian.
Ah, he's dreamy!
Yeah, that's an appropriate reaction.
Oh, Fabian.
And then you have unrelated Eleanor Donahue and Troy Donahue.
That's not confusing at all.
No.
And of course, Eleanor Donahue, about 6 years later, would star in one of my favorite shows as well as Greg's, Get a Life.
Huh. Yeah, she would be she was the mother for Chris Elliott's character.
Yeah, she was the wife to Bob Elliott on Get a Life. Then we go back to week 30, Carlo Imperato again from fame. Hey, there's Jane Kennedy again. Wycliffe in the house. And Nancy Lane, again, former Match Game player back in the late 70s, early 80s. Tom Bray's back.
Oh, yes.
On hit show now, Riptide.
Oh, yeah, because Riptide's getting an audience, baby. It's all about that robot.
Everybody likes the robot.
Yeah, he was no... I'll tell you this. That robot on Riptide, he was no chameleon. Because you know why?
Nothing was chameleon.
Because, you know, guys, chameleon's not a robot.
Yeah, and the Riptide robot worked all the time.
Yeah, it actually worked, unlike that stupid chameleon.
Didn't we talk about this last episode?
Hey, Peter Davison hated the crap out of that robot.
Yeah, I can't blame him. We had Ed Begley Jr. again from St. Elsewhere. Tom Poston's back. He would have been a Newhart at this point for at least a good 2 years.
Oh, wait, you mentioned my name, Mike?
Oh boy.
And quickly moving on, Jimmy Walker. Then, hey, more NBC folks. Mindy Cohn from Facts of Life. And, oh, look at all these dying TV shows. Eddie Mecca, David Lander, both from Laverne and Shirley. Lenny and Squiggy. And you had Lori Hendler from Gimme a Break. And you had Aaron Moran from Happy Days again. But also you had Nature Voles and you had Michael Winslow. Again, two somewhat regulars are back on the show in week 31.
He's holding out for the next Police Academy movie.
Remember, during one of his appearances, they did promote Police Academy. They said it was coming in summer of 84.
Yep, and this would be summer of 84. This week aired May 28th.
Yeah, late spring. In week 32, we had Bruce Baum, and we had William Christopher.
Yep, Farver Mulcahy.
Fanny Flagg, Tim Reed. Teresa Ganzel, we haven't really talked about her. She would have been on The Duck Factory at that time. Yes!
I forgot about that.
Yes, starring a certain someone who we mentioned a couple episodes ago.
Jim Carrey.
Yep.
Who will be playing Joe Biden on SNL.
Again, 40-year make good.
Obviously, at this point, Teresa Ganzel wouldn't be the tea time lady with Johnny Carson because Carol Wayne wouldn't pass away for about another year or so, 85.
Right.
Wow.
And then Robert Donner, again, we mentioned Robert Donner on Match Game in the late 70s, early 80s, coinciding with Mork and Mindy. And I think Mork and Mindy would have been gone at this point. I think it would have been done by 83.
Okay.
Week 33, Marty Cohen, another person who is a semi-regular from Solid Gold. He was like the in-house comedy. Yeah, Brian Mitchell again, unknown if he had any sort of vegetation. George Gobel appeared again, as did Rene Enriquez, Randy Oaks, and Richard Mall. So a lot of return visitors that week. Going down to the sixth of the last week, week 34, Richard Klein, Charlie Siebert. I don't think we've seen Charlie Siebert at this point.
No.
I think we might have seen him once.
We might have seen him once, but somebody I know we definitely didn't see is Roger E. Mosley from Magnum P.I.
Oh, yeah.
T.C.
And then Ken Kercheval, obviously from Dallas.
Yeah, I think he was in an earlier week.
Yep.
He may have been. Actually, now that you say that, I remember him. Yes. And then Pat Sajak is back. And again, Lois Hamilton, formerly Lois Arrhenio from Card Sharks. But then we get to week 35. Paula Kelly's back. Arlene Francis.
What?
The legendary Arlene Francis.
And yep. I think the last time she did Match Game at this point would have been 78, right before they brought on the new set.
Mm-hmm.
And the Star Wheel, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, Jamie Farr, McLean Stevenson, little MASH reunion there. Little MASH reunion there. Heidi Bohe from Hotel at the time. Linda Dano's back. Arsenio Hall's back. And some guy who has some show coming up. Chuck Woolery.
Oh, would that be Scrabble?
That would be Scrabble.
Yeah, that would be Scrabble. Also, he would have had Love Connection at that time, too.
Yeah, too. So, mm-hmm. But I mean, this would be kind of like his big return to NBC Daytime after Wheel.
This would have been like a week or two before Scrabble premiered.
They promoted the heck out of Scrabble.
If you like Wheel of Fortune, you're going to love the all-new Scrabble. The exciting word game with a real challenge. Weekdays, starring Chuck Woolery, following Wheel of Fortune.
I mean, when you think about it, Scrabble, the format of this game, is kind of sort of like Wheel with the letters.
Yeah, kind of. And with the punny writing.
So it's like Chuck Woolery going back to his roots, kind of.
Somewhat. Then 4 weeks left. Lydia Cornell, Anson Williams, Carlo Imperato, Phyllis Diller, Nathan Cook, Abby Dalton again, Charles Nelson Reilly, and one new person, Christina Pickles.
Secretly British.
Yeah, from seen elsewhere.
And then wrapping it up, last 3 weeks, Tom Villard, Jane Kennedy, Terrence Knox, Tom Poston, Fred Travellina, Kate McGeehan, and Mindy Cohn and Nedra Voles. So again, 7 of the 8 celebrities had been on previous weeks. Week 38, Didi Khan. Now, mind you, Didi Khan would have been on
Benson.
Well, she would have been on Benson, but that would have been, again, maybe about 6 years after Grease. Alex Cord, Michael Limbeck again, Audrey Landers again, Marty Cohen again, Judy Landers. Hey, both Landers sisters.
Anne-Marie Martin. Confused the two.
Anne-Marie Martin and Jimmy Walker. And then the final week, Leonard Fry, Barry Gordon, Roxy Roker, Rodri Mosley, Phyllis Diller, Fanny Flagg, Constance McCanson, and Charles Nelson Reilly. And as far as I know, I think all 8 of those people had been on the show at some point.
Yes.
So there's like the rundown of the celebrities, but there's a lot more that we can talk about. We can talk about famous contestants, because there are a number of contestants that stick out in our mind for how they played or how they looked and bigger things they went on to. Like, for instance, somebody that appeared on Match Game Hollywood Squares, and this is a name you guys would recognize more than me, is Eben Hamm.
Yes, he was an extra on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Again, it always goes back to Star Trek The Next Generation.
Damn right it do.
And we mentioned Eric Landaville's sister was on pretty early on, within like the first, I want to say, 8 weeks or so, definitely before he was on. And a name that's big now, or at least reasonably big now, especially if you have kids. This person was on the first week that aired in 84, and he was on for 3 episodes, and he was a 19-year-old art student at the time. A gentleman by the name of Butch Hartman.
Wait a minute. The guy from Fairly Odd Parents?
Among other shows.
Yep, that's the guy.
Plus, also, we should mention he's the namesake of Dr. Hartman on Family Guy.
You know, when you talk, you sound a lot like my father-in-law, Carter Puderschmidt.
Oh, that's funny. He's a patient of mine. Here's my urine sample, doctor. Thank you, Mr. Puderschmidt. Oh, hi, Peter. You know, Peter says we sound alike. Really? I don't hear it. Actually, I think I do hear it now. Really? Yeah, you know, we've never really had any extended interaction, so I've never noticed it. Hey, I think I hear it, too. Seems lazy, doesn't it? Well, there's only so many voices in the world. Some of them are bound to be similar.
That is true. I forgot about that.
Yes, he is. We should also add maybe a dubious distinction. He is at least the first person, and maybe the only person, to go to the Supermatch twice on consecutive installments and get the 30 each time and lose each time.
Yes, because he was the first person to get a $30,000 Supermatch loss.
And he was also the first person to get a $7,500 Supermatch loss.
Yeah. I think that's the only time the 30's been picked that's not in a $30,000 situation so far on Buzzer.
I think we've had a 30,000 loss besides that.
No, I mean, a person picks the 30 and it's not for $30,000.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, we haven't seen anything outside of that episode besides $1,000 being won and the 30's multiplying up with that. You're absolutely right about that thus far. Some other contestants that really ring a bell with us, and we talked about this gentleman on episode 1, and he was on early in week 3, and he did the exact opposite of Butch Hartman. He won the $30,000 back to back.
Yes.
Yep.
And we respectfully call him Magnificent Beard Guy.
Oh, what a magnificent beard he had.
He's got a plush
beard. Guy
has
a magnificent beard.
And yes, and those 2 episodes were so amazing. Buzzer reran them in St. Patrick's Day earlier this year as part of the Lucky Wins Marathon they had.
Yeah, he won with Marty Cohen once, and he won with Gloria Loring the other time.
What a great combo, huh?
Uh-huh. Morty Cohen and Robin Thicke's mama.
Yeah, it's a weird combination. Other contestants that sort of have caught her fancy. There was a contestant named Mark Byrd, and this would have been around episode 75. So we're talking roughly about the George Gobel week. And he was on for three episodes, didn't win a super match. But what he's known for is fantastic 80s porn stash.
Oh, yeah.
He had this thick porn stash.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
we're not insinuating he does porn.
Well, he kind of, if you look at him, he kind of looks like he's Borat's brother.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah, and very timely because what's coming out soon?
Yeah, Borat 2.
Oh, my God. Uh-huh. I cannot wait for that.
And then another person, and this is maybe Gray, I think, just fell in love on first sight with this contestant. Oh. We respectfully call her Katie DeTomato.
Yeah.
Katie DeTomato.
Katie
Charles. And she was on February of 84. And she was on for, gosh, I think four episodes.
Three or four episodes.
Yeah, she at least three episodes, I think four. And she was just like the most darling person ever. Somebody you could bring home to mom and dad.
Oh, yes.
She was awesome.
She was such a cutie.
And she did such a great job at the game.
She was. She was an incredible contestant.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's not really many other contestants we want to talk about, but there's some highlights we need to talk about.
Go on.
Well, again, we talked about back-to-back $30,000 wins in week three.
We did.
The second to last week of 83, the episode before Christmas, which would have been Friday, the 23rd of December of 83, you had a number of incidents that occurred. First, they actually displayed three Christmas trees on the light boards.
Yes, as we mentioned, Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour had an amazing light board.
Yeah, and I actually have, if I can bring it up real quick, they actually have, and Gene mentions this.
All right. Now, before we start the game, I just want to call attention, your attention, to this fabulous board here. It contains 2,304 light bulbs. And through the magic of some computerized console over there, they can make almost any name, any figure, anything happen up there. But I need the help of the stars. If you'd all join me over here, please. Have we got a follow spot on? Can we get that follow spot on over here? And would you all stand up here, please? Oh, and you brought your Christmas piñata, Jim. That was very nice of you. As close as you can together. And we'll do, in order to cue the light wall, which is a remarkable device, into doing something, we'll do just one line of Deck the Halls. Ready? All right.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly. Fa-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la.
Wait a minute.
You're on the later part of the show.
No, wait a minute. Wait a second. How about a little equal time for our Jewish friends?
Yay!
Oh, Hanukkah, oh, Hanukkah, it's 3 weeks before Christmas.
Thank you, Marty. Happy equal Hanukkah. Time. Yay! Happy Christmas and happy Hanukkah to all. Thank you all.
So the first thing revealed that day is that the big light board, when it was decked out with the Christmas trees, Gene says that there are 2,304 light bulbs on the total 768 squares, which means each square got three bulbs. So that's how you got the array of colors, obviously mixing like red and white or red and blue. Or
yellow.
Yeah. So you had a little bit of flexibility, which would have been amazing technology back in 83. But then, and we mentioned this some time ago, on Thursday, we had a $30,000 winner. Cindy Charbonneau won $30,000 with Leonard. So she's riding high.
Yep.
So what happens on the pre-Christmas episode? She totally bombs the super match.
Oops.
So she's playing for $100 times the multiplier. She picks Tom Poston, who's got 10. So that's $1,000. And Tom has what we lovingly call a mini coma.
Play the clip.
$1,000 here. $1,000 is okay. $1,000 added to the $31,000 would make it $32,000, wouldn't it? Good luck to you. Here it is. Johnny Blank. Johnny Blank. No help from the audience, please. Johnny Blank.
He's contemplating his answer. He's writing down an answer. It's the Tom Poston Play-by-Play Network. And he's still writing it down because Carson is such a long word.
I love to be a fly in that.
Carson, he's had a second thought. He's thinking Johnny Appleseed now. He's written Carson. He's written Appleseed. Oh, here comes another entry. Johnny Tremaine. Johnny Tremaine, Johnny Appleseed, Johnny Carson.
Tom's still thinking. He's still thinking.
Now Tom has passed him to Jim. Jim is showing something to Tom.
Tom's in the middle of an eyes open nap.
What is he doing?
And now Marty and Jim are choking the ever living dead Tom.
You have such a goofy look on your face. It looked as if you were thinking, and all of a sudden you're sitting there.
Now we know how he got his job as George Utley on Newhart.
What do I do?
Tom, what do you say?
You idiots.
That's the one.
They gave you the wrong
one. My choice. I signed that. All right.
And all that over $1,000.
$1,000. Give her the money.
Victoria Hallman has a 30. You're welcome, Greg.
Before Christmas, Tom, what do I have to do? But the thing is, oh, I'm the one you mean. Oh, I'm sorry.
We're going to get so much mileage out of that clip.
Oh, yeah.
And then you did have other little bonus events going on. So from 84 through the first roughly 2 weeks of February, we had the telephone match where home viewers who sent in postcards, they'd automatically win $500, and supposedly they didn't even know about that until Gene told them. And if they matched one of the celebs on a head-to-head, they would win $5,000, but also they'd earn an opportunity to have a walk-on appearance on an NBC soap opera.
Yay!
Well, there's one little issue with this, and they didn't play it for the entire 2 weeks. They played it until they had five winners. Yeah, so it wasn't on for the whole 2 weeks. Once they had five winners, nope, we're done. So the next episode would play as normal. No telephone match. During this time, we actually get one of the least successful undefeated champions. We get a gentleman by the name of Ron Barnes who was undefeated.
Yes.
He won his Hollywood Squares matches five times. He retired. But there's one huge problem. Listen to these numbers.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make everybody sad. He didn't win the big money on Wednesday. He didn't win the big money on Thursday. He did win the big money on Friday. He blew the super match and played for $2,000 100 times 20.
Oh.
So yeah, he won, but not impressively. And then on Monday, he missed the head-to-head match, and he sometimes missed gloriously. They were not good matches. And then on his last day, he missed the head-to-head match there, and of all things, he was going for $30,000.
Oh!
So man. He retired with one head-to-head match win, and he retired with $7,475.
Which isn't bad, if you think about it.
But for a five-day champion, that's... Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's sort of meh, especially when you see people who were on 2 days and 3 days, even, you know, 5 days, winning 40,000, 50,000. Yes, you had Magnificent Beard Guy winning 60,000 plus, and he only got 7,475.
Sad.
And again, as we stated, right now, the last episodes we've seen are the St. Elsewhere week, 23 weeks in. So we got about 16 weeks left. And definitely on the 50s week, well, first off, Rich Jeffries fills in for Gene Wood, which is definitely a change of pace because you're used to Gene Wood. And sometimes Johnny Olson, even though he doesn't really quite get the cadence down.
Yep. It's time for the match game. Hollywood Squares. Howard.
Grub Hot Potato. Bill Cullen.
So, on the Salute to 50s week, we have Rich Jeffries announcing. But also, and this is online, we do have a $30,000 win that week with Fabian.
Oh!
Sorry for spoiling it. And then, obviously, the last week, as we talked about earlier, Match Game Hollywood Squares would be replaced by Santa Barbara, which had a fairly lengthy run on NBC.
Yep.
But now, we didn't mention the hosts.
Yeah.
We know Gene Rayburn, but John Bauman.
Yeah. Bowser from Shanana.
So, Chico, you weren't here in episode one. Give us your thoughts about.
Oh, gosh. God bless him. He tried.
You know what? I got to say, John Bauman has grown on me.
He is an acquired taste. People warm to him. I like him. I think he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Peter.
I'm like, He's not gonna be Peter Marshall. Nobody's gonna be Peter Marshall. He's John Bauman. That's all he could be, and he made the thing work.
But
so that's what's why I said, God bless him, he tried.
But I will say this. Early on he didn't look that well. But when you have the likes of Jay Leno and Fred Travellina and Bruce Baum, Vic Dunlop, some of the comedians who are trying to ham it up because, you know, they're comedians. He did a good job of maintaining the pace, saying, okay, guys, time's a factor. We're trying to win folks' money. So you got to give him some credit there.
And and you know what? I like the way he throws it to commercial.
Yes.
I'm a fan of the way he throws it to commercial. It's like, and we'll be right back. You come back too.
And I also like how whenever they pick him for the head-to-head match in the Super Match, the little Veni Vidi Vici thing when he pulls the number.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. But I want to show you a few something. Now, we were wondering what was the deal with Peter Marshall. Well, I have Adam Neidoff's book right here on Gene Rayburn for you that answers this question about the origins of the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. Now, Peter is interviewed in the book, and he says, at the time when the show was being developed, he owned a piece of Hollywood Squares. According to Peter, there was a year when Heater Quigley gave me a share of it when I renewed my contract. And even though they sold it off what they owned, I still had my piece and I was in a position where I could do things with it. What I really wanted to do was get two shows back into production at NBC. During the 60s and 70s, Hollywood Squares aired back to back with Jeopardy. It was the original version with Art Fleming. And we got great ratings and I thought we still could. Jeopardy had no control over that. That was a different company, obviously Merv Griffin, different people, and I couldn't do anything about that. But I was completely serious about pitching this, even though Jeopardy wasn't mine. I wanted to talk to NBC into putting both shows back on the air. I met with a man at Orion Television and negotiated a deal where I would sign over my rights to Squares in exchange they would help me get the shows back on the air. I pitched the idea first to Grant Tinker, who was the chairman of the board at NBC back then, because right. Grant and I had a relationship outside of television. We were friends. Grant liked the idea. The guys running NBC Daytime at that point were incensed because they felt I went over their heads. I didn't go over their heads. Grant was my friend. So the NBC Daytime guys found out I had signed over my share of Squares to Orion. They did business with the people at Orion, and Grant Tinker wound up being the one who called and broke the news to me that NBC was picking up Hollywood Squares, but that they didn't want me involved. They screwed me, and I immediately knew the show was going to be a disaster because they weren't going to hire anybody who worked on the original show. They were going to hire an entirely new group to run it, and that was a horrible idea.
Well, it wasn't an entirely new group to write it. It was the new to Squares group, but it wasn't entirely. It's like, I think I said this on my other podcast, WLTI. It's like, Match Game Hollywood Squares. It seems like Goodson Todman wanted to bring back Match Game at the behest of Squares. They spent all this time on Match Game, but not a lot of time on Hollywood Squares.
I think you even said it yourself, Chico.
It was almost an afterthought.
Well, you also said, and I correct me if I'm wrong, you said it was a bastardized version of Battlestars.
I did say that. I did say it was a bastardized version of Battlestars.
Which I could agree with, since basically every question was a binary question. You had either answer A, you had answer B. That's what happened on Battlestars. You didn't necessarily have that on Hollywood Squares back in the 70s and 60s.
A or B, yes or no, this or that.
Which is older, this or that? Yeah. And the thing is, they did some great pairings, you know, for which is older, and they'd have two loosely related items. And then you had your usual, like, household tips and etiquette, you know.
Mary Ellen says, Mark Goodson really loved Mary Ellen, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that was a flaw with the game, but I could see why they did that to keep the show moving. Plus, also, one thing that, you know, made people mad, or frustrated, I should say, is if you missed the square, your opponent automatically got it, even in a win situation, which I understand, but also at the same time, you want to get as many games in. You don't want to get just one game in or two games in. I think at some point they got like five games in, or at least four for sure.
Because they play Hollywood Squares to the schedule.
Yeah. I know we had on one episode the champion winning the Hollywood Squares portion by a total, and this isn't even a joke, $1,300 to
$2,500. Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. At that point, I'd almost be like, nope. Don't give me the pity $25. I don't even deserve it.
So we talked about the host. We talked about the show. Have we talked about the legacy of the show? Is there a legacy of the show?
I think
the legacy has sort of returned over the last year to year and a half.
Yeah, because this has basically become, I mean, the show was never rerun until last year. And most people, when they discovered this, on so we're not big fans of the genre like us, are like, what?
Yeah, it's like, this doesn't work. How does this even work?
Well, and the thing is, it's very polarizing. Either you love the game or you hate it.
Yeah, that's true.
And they must be getting halfway decent ratings because it airs now at 11 o'clock on weekdays at 11 a.m. It airs at 10 p.m. weeknights. It airs at 1 a.m. weeknights, all Eastern time, by the way. And then it even airs a couple of times on the weekend. I believe 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays and 3 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. So obviously, you know, people must be watching it because, you know, they have, what, pretty much like 17 airings on any given week?
Yeah. So there's incentive to get those last few episodes converted.
Yeah, I mean,
we know you have the technology, Freeman. It'll make it happen.
And I had a theory about this, and I wonder if they're going to do it, not necessarily for Buzzer, but I wonder if at some point Fremantle is going to create their own version of HBO Max or Disney Plus or some sort of channel like that where you can watch not just Goodman Todman shows, but you know, other Fremantle shows, thinking specifically Baywatch.
Yeah.
Earth Shadows.
Yeah. So I think really that may be what's going on is if they're converting it, it isn't for the benefit of Buzzer. Obviously, you want to salvage it or save it in some capacity. Obviously, if you can, you know, convert it, you'll be able to stream it or have your own on-demand channel. Or we know that a lot of Buzzer products have appeared on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
And yeah, and even for a show like Beat the Clock in 1979, they've got, I believe, 60 episodes up, and I think there were only, if I remember correctly, like 90 or 91. So they've got two-thirds of the run up, and this, of course, is where I make my plea. I need closure.
Yeah, please, guys. Please, people.
Guys,
Buzzer Fremantle, give Mike closure on Beat the Clock with Monty
Hall. Pretty sure we would. I think we all need closure.
Yeah. Seriously, I need closure because I need to know how the week with Rolna Hovis and her husband, Guy Hovis, how that week ended. When GSN aired it, I think they aired up until the third to last episode and then pulled it. You're three episodes away. Three episodes away. So there's my plea again for the missing episodes of Beat the Clock to air. So maybe they'll pacify me by getting that done in the next 3 years or so. Who knows? But again, also, that is a supply and demand thing. If there's a demand for it, they're going to convert those leftover 30 episodes. But also at the same point, if they are actually like creating an archive or creating some sort of on-demand, some sort of VOD, or even just if they want to put it in digital format for posterity, there you go. I think it makes perfect sense. You want to save your investments if at all possible. And I know Buzzer has a ton of shows to convert, but if they convert 50,000 or 60,000 shows or however many they have, that would be one hell of a VOD channel.
We'd be interested.
Oh, I'd pay good money for that. Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
And I think one more thing we're going to mention, and we haven't mentioned it yet, is the absolute kick butt theme song.
God, Lottery by Ed Kalehoff.
One of the most bombastic pieces of music on a TV show. I'm not even saying a game show ever.
It's like that is not the theme. It's like that is not a theme song to a game show. That is a theme song to an event. You
exactly.
hear this song, you know some shit is about to go down proper.
You're absolutely right. This is not necessarily a game show theme, but you know something big is going to happen.
This is big.
And maybe not necessarily with the prizes of Match Game Hollywood Squares, but remember when they used it on Price is Right from like 84 till I think like 2001, 2002? You were not playing for some rinky-dink hatchback by Ford.
You're playing for a Lincoln.
I wouldn't say necessarily a Lincoln, but you're playing for probably a good $20,000 to $25,000 car back in the day.
And I have something pretty nice for you, Albert.
Okay.
I have it sitting right back here. A new sports car! Daytona, the American built high-performance front-wheel drive sports car with aerodynamic styling, high technology, and full sports car instrumentation. The Dodge Daytona comes with these options: California emission, pearl coat paint, outside dual power mirrors, and battery charger. And if you win this car, you'll also receive this new car phone. Okay, advanced cellular car phone features push-button dialing, last number recall, 100-cell memory, dial number display, and electronic lock from Okay Telecom.
So, yeah, that was event music. That was not something that you saved for the Ford Focus. Nope. That is something that you definitely would use for, let's say, Three Strikes. That would be something for, whatever big car game you had at the time where the cars were at least $20,000 up to maybe about $30,000.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And amazing theme song. One of my favorites of all time. Got to give him credit. All those cues are amazing.
They are. Okay.
Anything else?
I'm just thankful to being able to see this show at long last. I mean, I've been sort of part of game show web for the last 20 years, and I've always heard about this show, but I never got to see it. Now I get to see it, and it's everything I thought it would be and more.
Yeah, and at least one of us, well, me, neither of you had seen it, obviously, at the time. I remember this when it originally aired. I mean, I don't remember necessarily specifics. I remember some specifics, but you don't forget that big light board.
No.
And you don't forget that theme music.
You don't forget that theme music, and you don't forget the voice of Gene Wood.
Or Johnny Olson.
Or Rich Jeffries.
That sounds like Barney.
That's what that... Well, Rich Jeffries sounds like Barney.
He does sound like Barney.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? I think it's time to put a bow on episode 100.
Yeah. Hey, guys. We did it, everyone.
Hey.
100 episodes. Yeah, we did it, everyone. 100 episodes. Some people might say it's a time for looking back. No way. We're looking ahead, and we're just getting started.
Well, I think we can officially say this, and I'm sure you have noticed it by this point, the viewer. Number one, we have a new logo. Ooh. I upgraded the TV. And it looks a lot better. It doesn't look
It totally looks a lot better.
But also, Greg, he's working to get all 100 episodes, or actually probably over 100, on YouTube.
That's right, folks. We officially have a YouTube channel.
Yay! Which means you're going to get to see our which means you're going to get to see one of our faces at the beginning of every episode saying, "Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe."
Well, actually, it's just a picture of the logo.
Okay, that's cool too.
That's cool too. But yeah, I'm going to get all 100 episodes, and I'm also going to try to get every Place to Be Nation pop cut up there.
And speaking of the Place to Be Nation pop cut, this week,
the one that came out on October 7th,
there is a little bonus that we included on the SNL Dumanian season episode.
Yes. I also included a couple of Easter eggs. I'm going to consider the SNL like 80 thing, because it's probably already up at this point. I'm releasing 97, 98, 99, one batch.
Oh, Greg, from a couple weeks ago, little do you know what's to come.
This is all on its own, baby. Because for the 100th episode of Place to Be Nation Pop, yeah.
This is a big one.
This is a really big one. And you know what?
We're not sharing this with Chameleon, so.
No, we're not.
Not deserving. But next week.
Yes.
One is sort of timely given what's going on.
Yeah.
So as always, don't forget the website, www.itwasathingontv.com. 100 prior episodes, plus two live episodes, two mini episodes, the pilot episode zero. So don't forget to like and subscribe and rate and review. And you better give us 5 stars because Chico's going to come to your house if you don't.
And before we sign off, I just want to say, we want to thank the people at Place to Be Nation Pop. I want to thank 3 people in particular before we sign off. Todd Weber, who did a good job getting the first 59 episodes up. He was an MVP on that on the edits when we first got on there. Jennifer Smith, an amazingly talented podcaster. Listen to her Jenny Position feed. It's amazing. And Andy Afferton at Place to Be Nation Pop. So I want to thank those 3 people before we sign off.
Absolutely. Thanks to all 3 of you for your support. And of course, don't forget to share, because sharing is caring. And we got 100 shareable episodes now, so plenty of stuff to listen to.
Can you believe that we got to start focusing on episode number 200?
Oh, gosh.
We may have to revisit Match Game Hollywood Squares again.
Oh, my God. We'd have to do a third revisit for the final couple months.
No, we'll find a better one.
Final revisit for the last batch of episodes? I don't know.
No. Greg will find an episode worthy of being 200.
Oh.
Because there's so many topics to cover, and we haven't even gotten to the worst of it yet.
We're not even. We're almost to 2,000 submissions, baby.
Yeah, so we're like 5% the way there, and submissions keep on coming every day.
Oh, yeah.
But as always, after 100 episodes, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for subscribing. We'll be back next week with the start of the second 100 episodes of It Was a Thing on TV.
Row!
Hello there. Katie. Let's get acquainted. Tell us about you, please.
I'm from Littleton, Colorado.
Littleton, Colorado.
And I've been living in Southern California for 1.5 years.
Mm-hmm. You like it here?
I love it.
You gonna stay?
Mm-hmm. For a while.
A lot of snow in Littleton right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you do anything to keep your body and soul together?
I run.
You do? That helps?
Mm-hmm.
You eat once in a while?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
I eat a lot.
All right.
Now, Katie, you've got $1,000.
Now it's time for the head-to-head match with any star of your choosing. And after you've made your decision, that star will reveal the hidden number. It'll be a 10, a 20, and there's 130 up there. We'll multiply the $1,000 by whatever number is revealed. Okay, time now to make your pick.
John plays.
All right, John, grab the tab and give it a yank, and we'll see if it's going to be a big 3-0. It's a 10. You're playing for $10,000.
Oh, that's a shame, isn't it?
All right. Let's go right there. Okay, good luck to you. $10,000 here. All you have to do is match John. Blank nail. N-A-I-L. Blank nail. Okay, John's ready to collect the $10,000. You have to match him. What do you say to this?
Fingernail.
Fingernail? Okay. Okay, John, she says fingernail will match you for the big money of $10,000. Have you got it? He's got it! $25. Congratulations, Chief Katie. We'll be back with you right after this.